Blog Talk Radio.
Equality, to be equal. White people can't be equal to black people because they can't produce melanin pigment. And that's the basis upon which they operate. You see, so again, you know, platitudes and all of that's good, but it doesn't have anything to do with the reality, the specific reality that has caused the problem for people for 500 years plus. See, people are called white or you're non-white. That's on the census. That's the classification. You see, that is the problem. The word white, when it refers to human beings, means genetic deficiency. Mutation, genetic deficiency, inability to produce melanin pigment, it means tiny minority on the planet. You see, there's no way around it. It's like an elephant being in a room. And everybody is walking around squeezed up against the wall. But they're not talking about the elephant because they are afraid to talk about the elephant. For whatever reasons. And so the problem is to talk about the elephant. When will the elephant be talked about? See, black people can be genocided. Native American people have been genocided. People can be genocided. See, that's what the young white people who get frustrated and they get a gun and they start shooting large numbers of people, because this is the message of the culture. You have a problem, you're upset about something, then go get your father's gun or your mother's gun and start killing a lot of people. Human life means nothing at this crisis point on this planet. Unless this specific problem is addressed.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Paulette. And, of course, you just heard some words of wisdom, of truth, of reality from the great Dr. Francis Crest Welsing. And this program tonight is, of course, a salute to her, given the fact that her Earth Day took place Friday, the 18th. She was born on March 18th, 1935, of course, made transition on January the 2nd of 2016. And so me, who are familiar with her work, certainly know of her brilliancy. Certainly know how much she is so dearly missed, particularly in this day and age, and are so appreciative of the work, the information, the inspiration that she, of course, gave to so many. Talk about the Crest theory of color consultation and racism, i.e. white supremacy. Certainly, there is very few that can compare, if any, with her work. And while she gave a lot of accolades, of course, to the great Brother Neely Fuller, certainly Dr. Francis Crest Welsing was in a league of her own. And so again, tonight, we want to take this time to hail up our ancestor, to remember her, to not only remember her work, but to heed to her warnings, and certainly to make certain that we move forward to continue the kinds of information, the kinds of instruction that she gave us. again, the great Frances Luella Welsing. Chris Welsing. Okay, moving right along, family, we welcome all of you again for tuning into this segment of New Day. And we want to remind you that it is, of course, Women's History Month for many who observe it. Got a chance to tune into a couple of Zoom meetings today. I mean, it's so many Zoom meetings all the time now, but it's a good thing because you get a lot of good information and are able to connect with our people, both nationwide and worldwide. And so today I got the opportunity to tune into a special weekend program for Iman Jamil Al-Amin, also known as H-Rap Brown. Going to give you some information about that a little later on. The last session is going to take place tomorrow. And I'm telling you, it was powerful, powerful. But those programs tend to usually be that way and then some. So, again, if you have the opportunity, you might want to check some of it out tomorrow. Sister Pam Africa, Baba Bilal Sunni Ali, Brother Jihad. I mean, it was a whole lot of folks. And again, because it was such a nice variety, it was kind of, you know, good to be able to kind of get focused in on the issue of Iman Jamil Al-Amin being a political prisoner. For those who do not know, the We Charge Genocide 21 has, in fact, taken a clear position in that as we approach preparatory justice, the Boots on the Ground campaign is on to obtain the first 1 million signatures that we will take to the United Nations at the end of the year. One of the positions that we are now making clear in these next months, of course, is, of course, the freeing of all of our political prisoners. In the idea, in the principle, in the quest for reparatory justice, this certainly is something that can be obtained and should be obtained, ASAP, as a sign of goodwill, good faith, or whatever you want to call it. This is certainly one of the things that can be done right away. Some of the other issues, some of the other matters, concerns dealing with reparatory justice will take some time. But this is one of the things that we're saying can happen now and should. So we're hoping that you and others will begin to take even more action in freeing Mumia Abu-Jamal as well as all of our elder political prisoners and all of our political prisoners, period. With that said, for sisters, we are going to have a special session next week starting on Thursday. It's called our Serious/Serious Sister Series. And it's going to be primarily geared to Black women who really are ready to advance in us being Black women, making certain that our families and communities are able to obtain and sustain a better quality of life. And so starting on Thursday, we will begin those sessions again for what we call the Serious Sister Series. And of course, the Serious is SERIOUS/SIRIUS. Serious is considered, in terms of the constellation, is considered to be one of the brightest constellations in the system. And so certainly for us to be serious sisters is of great significance. And so again, I'm going to give you more information about that. Some of the sessions will be open for anyone that wants to tune in, listen in, participate, and some of the sessions will be closed sessions. The closed sessions will be for members only. So for those of you who are not members and you would like to be a part of the, what one might call the inner circle, for lack of a better terminology, right now is an excellent time for you to become a member because it is now a 50% off on the annual donation membership, meaning $25 for the entire year. And there are, of course, you know, little perks and stuff that goes with that, including discounts on upcoming conferences and other special events. We're also partnering with other groups, organizations, companies, black companies, of course. And so there's going to be the capability of providing discounts for some of the goods and services that we will be partnering with. Of course, the 24-year anniversary of the Million Woman March is approaching, and let us not forget the 25, which we're also planning for, you know, as we speak. And certainly we've got a lot of good stuff that's coming up for both this year and next year, particularly given the fact that it appears that the COVID thing is beginning to kind of bring things back into, not the COVID thing in itself, but the system and how they're dealing with the COVID thing, with you know, having people think about, you know, now that all these millions of folks have been vaccinated or got the vaccination, that things are okay or getting back to being okay. And so cities are starting to open back up, allowing more things to happen, particularly gatherings. And so, again, we are looking forward to that so that, you know, we can start getting back into being in our communities to a greater extent. Okay, and so, again, you know, for Philadelphia and other cities, that is definitely beginning to happen. So, you know, we shall see what happens in the next month or so. Okay, let's see. The other thing we want to share with you again, oh, listen, I guess most of you have seen that there is a new president in Tanzania. Yep, a black woman, a sister, an African woman, is now the new president in Tanzania. Okay, so we're going to talk briefly a little bit about that a little later on. And also, it was something else that occurred we wanted to bring to your attention. That'll come to me in a few moments. But again, before we get ready to bring in our brother, Dr. Hassan is in the house, and we're going to do part two with him tonight on the topic of African spirituality and, of course, his latest book. You know, last week was powerful, and so we want to certainly continue that conversation, that dialogue, and talk more about the Afrocentric Pan-African Papyri set principle, idea, and so forth. But also, you know, one of the things that have come to my thinking processes as I begin to examine further our ideals and kind of philosophies dealing with spirituality and religion, it just brings to mind how important it is that we further develop something that's going to be a bit more productive for us, and not just from a survival mode, but that's going to really elevate us and really move us forward. And so we're going to be talking more about that in the near future as well. Years ago, there was something called Black Liberation Theology. What happened to that? I mean, surely there's a few who kind of, you know, talk about it, aspire to it, but where is that really going now? And can it be something that can be a tool or instrument in helping us to advance as a people? The idea of dealing with religion or spirituality in a way where it's geared specifically for us and specifically for justice and liberation, because that is what Black Liberation Theology represented or had a, you know, big portion in that. And so there's a few groups and organizations that still advocate and still uphold those principles and ideals. And, of course, one of them being the Temple of the Black Madonna. They are still in existence both in Chicago, Detroit, and Atlanta. And so these are things that we need to look at closer, because they were able to keep it together for 50 years and have grown and developed in doing so. They have their own stores. They have their own schools. They have their own church or place of worship. And they function in a political way as well. in Chicago, they have a whole thing where they have a black physical platform that they do. So we have to look closer at what things really work best for us. Okay, one last thing before we bring in our brother, Dr. Hashim. Also joining us a little later on is going to be Dr. Layla Brown Vinson. And she, of course, is a representative from the AAPRPGC. And today, the organization, the women's union of the organization, had a conference today, a virtual conference, and that's one of the conferences I was able to listen to. Very good. And so we're going to talk with her about that. And of course, the topic, one of the main topics for today was women fighting for socialism, social justice, and revolution. Okay, so we're going to talk to her about that and a few other things. Now, for those who do not know, MWM, of course, is bringing forward its what one might call its ideological platform. We've held back over the years in doing that because we really, really wanted to do the kinds of research and evaluation that we felt was necessary to bring things forward in the 21st century, and so we've done that. And so in doing so, we've done some comparative analysis in developing our, what one might call now manifesto and our mandates. I can assure you we've looked at the various systems that are amongst us in terms of political, economic, and all of those things relevant to that, and realize maybe behoove us to think out the box and not try to keep perpetuating all that. So these are some of the things you're going to hear us talk more about. Again, starting on Thursday for the A Million Black Women Rising special sessions, we're going to start breaking down what the universal movement of the Million Women March is. Oh, and by the way, those of you who are interested, you can now purchase the 100 Amazing Facts about the Million Women March. Because we're really sick and tired of misinformation and people fronting and holding on to stuff that they did for 2 weeks, 2 months, or whatever, and did nothing else. And so, you know, we got to make sure that, and those people who said, you know, oh, they dreamt of it, you know, years ago and all this other stuff. I'm like, ooh. Anyway, going to put some of that to rest, finally. And also, we are bringing forward our own Black Women's History and Black Women's Studies initiative. I'll tell you more about that later. Anyway, let's get ready to go to our live line. And I see our brother in queue and family. We get ready to have another very good conversation dealing with African spirituality, religion, metaphysics to some degree, but also ancient kinetic kinds of thought processes, and I dare say Black universal, okay? And that's because, see, I like physics and I study physics, so when a lot of people be talking about Black in the context of just, you know, this other thing, I deal with it from a very holistic concept in that we're it. We are, if not the primary element in the universe, certainly one of the key ones. It is in that spirit and in that context that I refer to being Black, not this other stuff that folks be referring to, the Black codes. And no, grow up. We ain't talking about that. Anyway, moving right along, family. Let's go to Dr. Hashim. We get ready to come to you and open up your mic. Give me one moment. I want to make a quick announcement before we do, and it is, for MWM, oops, hold on one minute. For MWM 24, we're putting a call out to the mothers, daughters, sisters of the movements. We're talking about specifically from the 1950s to present day. Those women and girls who have been involved in anything that has been relevant to our people striving for, fighting for, obtaining your liberation justice, then this gathering coming up this year as a part of the Million Woman March 24-year anniversary is for you. We want to connect generations. But not only that, we want to be more responsible in making certain that our history and our achievements are both well-documented as well as passed on, embraced, etc. That's not happening. Right here in Philadelphia, most of the females that I've encountered here in Philadelphia do not even know the history of black women and who really have done various things here in Philadelphia. And it's like that in other cities as well. And we have no, like, centralized entity that enables us to gather that kind of information and then to properly disseminate it. We don't have that. Now, of course, the other people do, but we know that. So we're now preparing to kind of, again, being more responsible and making certain that we are the keepers of our own culture and history, legacies, and so forth. So, again, the mothers, daughters, sisters of the movement. We will pay tribute to the UNIA, ACL, the Black Panther Party, the Nation of Islam, the NAACP, CORE, SNCC, RAM, you name it. Again, this is in reference to the work that our women did, are doing, when it comes to fighting for our liberation as a people and justice. And so, again, with this being Women's History Month, we're putting the call out. If you want to be a presenter or you want to participate in some other way, volunteer, do whatever, now is the time to sign up. And we're looking to do this later this year. Can't give you an exact time right now. Of course, our anniversary time for Million Women March Week, of course, is always going to be October. But we're going to do some things leading up to October. So, again, the mothers, daughters, sisters of the movement, this is going to be our first session. We plan to do several. This is our first one. And this one is kind of titled Generation to Generation, so that our young sisters are able to connect with some of the older sisters. Again, this is our mothers, daughters, sisters of the movement. And again, we're going to differentiate, you know, the illusion of what people think this was or is and what it really is, the fight that's really for our people that had nothing to do with dollars. It had to do with what was right. Anyway, let's get ready to go to our live line and join us again. Is our brother, Dr. Hassan Tambui, is in the house. Greetings to you, Dr. Hassan.
Greetings, Dr. Filet, Chinoisu. How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Wonderful.
I'm doing great. Thank you again for having me. I'm always excited and honored to be on the show.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Hold on 1 minute. I've got to turn my volume up just a little bit so that I know I'm hearing you. Here we go. Great. I got you now. Okay. All right, family. So we have with us our brother Hassan Tambui, and we're going to talk again about we're going to pick up where we left off sort of from last week, my brother. Is that okay?
That's fine. You know, last week I did a lot of talking. I wasn't expecting it to go that way. However, you know, you allowed me to be able to share the information. And as you said last week, you have some specific questions. So I'll let you decide if you want to ask those questions or if you want me to go a little bit more in depth into what I discussed last week.
No, I do. I want you to go a little bit more into
sure.
your theory, your concept, and then I have just a few questions, but then I want to open it up for our family because, as I said, you know, we are known to be what some would call spiritual people. Now,
yes.
Some have debated that could have been part of our downfall in that mm-hmm. we tend to be gracious, mm-hmm. kind, You know, all of those attributes that lend to, you know, more of a moral person, a spiritual person, as we may. And so, you know, it has been examined in such a way that when you have that in the same realm of other stuff that is almost totally opposite to that, wow. So we've got to really, you know, start examining that a little more, because there seems to be some real possibilities as to when people raise the question, well, how did this happen to us? We've got to get to some answers, at least what we think could be some possibilities. So let me, brother, please share with us more from your book, and then we're going to go to the line to talk with our family some.
Yes. Well, I definitely want to get into your observation, and it's definitely relevant to the topic of spirituality and religion. However, let me say this. In any information that I share with you or your audience tonight, if it leads you to anger and to hate another race or religion or God, then you're not hearing what I want you to learn. And that being, this is about an awareness and acceptance for your own African culture, religions, and gods. So I wanted to start off there to make sure that we're clear and we're all on the same page, because the information is more so about you and being aware, again, of your own culture and religion and your own African gods. Now, I want to say something to your point about the observation about, you know, generally we are very kind to strangers. And within the context of religion, it is the religion that actually reinforces that. You know, we learn from the religious traditions, for example, to, you know, welcome strangers and those types of things. And in that way, that is why Afrocentricity, I'm speaking of the many different approaches, is not truly purely about African culture or religion in that way, for that reason that you described, because if it was about that, then there would be no progress. So it's about recognizing the very thing that you recognized and making the changes accordingly, so that you won't repeat that same situation. It is almost in our DNA as race individuals that it's in our nature that we believe in a higher power. In other words, our being of who we are on Earth, on this planet that we call Earth, it's in our DNA. Very rarely will you meet someone that will say they're an atheist, an African person that will say they don't believe in God. I'm using God here to relate to the audience, so that I can take you to where I want to get you. In counseling, for example, I'm a counselor by training. And one of the things that we do in practice is we really have to meet the client or the individual person where they're at. So I'm using that term to sort of relate to your understanding, again, of the supernatural and the thoughts or ideas that form in your mind, which we call spirituality. However, that there's another term, too, that's associated with our understanding of God or the supernatural or the creator, for example, and that has to deal with our behaviors and the rituals that we practice in service and worship to a god or gods, for example, all right? And again, there has always been the idea of what is called monotheism in African religion, or should I say African spirituality and religion, all right? There has been one creator, However, there's many manifestations of that creator. So to say that African historical and traditional religion is pagan is, again, really not to understand the meaning of words and how those words relate to, again, understanding your own culture, which is, again, why I opened up my book in the beginning. Because earlier, Dr. Chinoiso, you talked about going a little bit more in depth. So I'm going a little bit more in depth, talking about why I did what I did and how I approached what I approached in my book. And that approach begins with the understanding of Afrocentric Pan-Africanism. And with that, Afrocentric Pan-Africanism, again, is that idea of relating to your African culture, being aware of it. What are your thoughts in regards to African culture? And then as a result of your thoughts, how do you practice it? All right. And that's just a real straight definition. I could get very technical. And, again, we can get technical. However, again, just for the simplicity of it, so that your listeners get an idea of what it is, that is what it pretty much entails. As an African person, I'm aware I am an African person. And as a result of that, then how do I interact, for example, with others in society based on my African culture and my behaviors? So that is what I do. Mm-hmm. I open the book because, again, a lot of people, they may hear the words, you know, they may hear Afrocentricity, mm-hmm. for example, African-centered, mm-hmm. You know, all these different centric terms. And, of course, they may associate them with individuals, rightfully so, because these individuals have carried on the intellectualism or the development of these terms so that, again, it adjusts with time. You know, as the world changes, so must we. So rightfully so, you have to have different individuals that take these terms, for example, and are able to grow the terms and present them in such a way so that the people can take them in and practice them. So that was one of the main reasons why in the beginning I opened up the book, to provide a clear definition so that people understand what Afrocentricity is and how it can be applied to your daily life. And, you know, you hear a lot, or I've heard a lot, let me say that, about religion and spirituality. And sometimes the way it's presented, the facts are right on. However, it's hard for individuals to sort of grasp onto it. And so that's why I, again, present the definition and make it really simple so that you can sort of grasp onto it. So after I, you know, talk about those definitions, I also include in those definitions the definitions of, again, God and spirituality. And over history, we have found that, again, we're a very spiritual people. Now, because of our experiences in American society, our interactions with our innate belief of the Creator or God, and just with our experience primarily with one religion, dealing with Christianity, we have sort of thrown out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. There's that expression. Whereas, okay, again, we have our natural belief in the Creator, that there does exist a Creator. However, again, because of the experience or the water, so to speak, to the Christian religion, we want to throw out religion altogether and just talk about spirituality. And mm-hmm. really what we need to do is we need to look at the concepts within religion that are useful, for example, or are favorable to our innate spirituality that will allow us to grow and, as you said, apply it to our everyday life. You know, earlier you mentioned about there used to be this term about Black liberation theology, right? And
mm-hmm.
it has,
mm-hmm.
you know, where has it gone? And why aren't people talking about it as much? Well, one of the things that I would say in regards to that is, again, if an idea of concept, as I mentioned earlier, applied to Afrocentricity, if it doesn't evolve and grow, then it's going to be put to the wayside. And so,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but most importantly, too, is it has been talked about for a very period of time. However, what we're seeing
mm-hmm.
is, as I mentioned to you last week about your interview with Mike Africa and the importance of being connected to the grassroots, we see at the grassroots level that a lot of our people have been, again, aware that, you know, for whatever reasons, for whether or not Christianity suits them, or they learn more about religion, or they travel for whatever reason, a lot of the grassroots individuals are coming into learning about African historical and traditional religion, what I call Patara-Aset. So as a result of that, okay, this is now where, again, not that Black liberation theology has completely fallen off the table. It has evolved, all right, in our understanding, in terms of our spirituality and our behaviors in service to the Creator or God to be able to primarily solve our problems, all right? So that is my thought in regards to your observation earlier about this thing about Black liberation theology. I would say it has evolved, and most importantly, people at the grassroots level who are raising these questions about religion and its importance to be able to solve our problems, but not only that, to see how it applies in our daily lives and being able to make it very, very tangible is, you know, it's important. 'Cause again, we're about 55 years out of the civil rights movement. And again, during that period of time, we were looking at a different perspective. However, that lens was really a colored lens of a white cultural lens that we were really looking through. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with it because, again, things evolve and change. So we were evolving and changing in the awareness of ourselves, of our culture, and then that seeps through every aspect of society. Then it goes into religion, all right? So now, you know, religion is going through that evolution and through that change. And so that's why I wanted to write the book the way I wanted to. I wanted to be able to break it down very simple, very, very, very simple terms about, one, the approach, all right, and two, about these terms, basic term, one, what is God? What is God's? You know, what is spirituality? What is religion? Okay, then now when I talk about those terms, okay, that everybody can relate to, now I go into what you mentioned earlier. Now, okay, well, what is this? What is your philosophy of analysis? Well, what is your philosophy? Okay, so how do I analyze nature now given the observation of these concepts. And that's when I go into, once I introduce that, I then talk about, I was watching an interview the other day. I know some of your listeners may know, because the brothers, from my understanding, is out of Philly. I tend to always, seems now that I'm in more, I get to see more and more on YouTube. However, I was watching an interview from a brother, Dr. Umar Johnson, and I heard him talk. From my understanding, I know the brother practices a Nigerian Patara set of Orisha Ifa. It was a very good interview in which he was, you know, talking about working with or being a school psychologist, working with African American boys, and there was a segment part mentioned in there where he talks about from his standpoint that the religion is not as important to him. It's about the economics and the political and the cultural thought. And again, I'm going off of just what I recall. However, though, from seeing that interview, I thought, that's interesting. I don't necessarily think that way. To me, I think religion is, based on my understanding of religion and how religion works, I thought the religion is just as important, particularly, again, just going back to our nature and how we are spiritual beings. And so from what I understand about the brother as well, he is relatives or kin to, or he has some type of family connection to Frederick Douglass. And he always as well talks about Marcus Garvey and being part of the UNIA. So from that, I said, wow, this is very interesting. Of course, most of your listeners and know about Marcus Garvey. And so I actually went to look up some information about Marcus Garvey and Frederick Douglass, and both of them, you know, what some of our strongest voices in American history. However, their movements, particularly the UNIA, as well as, you know, Frederick Douglass as an abolitionist, those movements were not void of, again, their relationship to the supernatural, to God, the Creator. It existed, as well as Garvey, you know. I know there is talk of Garvey not teaching religion per se, probably in the sense that we may think of it as. However, he did preach religion. He did talk about religion. And so based upon, you know, hearing that interview as part of the discussion and me thinking and putting my thoughts together on paper, that is when I say, okay, well, we have this history. And in African culture, there is always this proverb. And, of course, this one is from the Akan ethnic group out of Ghana, West Africa, that deals with Sankofa. And it talks about you going back to your past. All right, and going back and getting that which is necessary or that you can use that provides useful lessons for your future. So in that way, in Dr. Johnson mentioning those brothers in the interview, or the ancestors, I should say, both Garvey and Douglass, and then my research dealing with that, I speak to, again, why it's important to go back and look at those movements, and particularly their use of spirituality and religion to achieve primarily the goal that the brother was wanting. Now, you know, I really speak about, in going back to the past, this idea about the concept, and I spoke a little bit briefly about this, about power. You know, it's Malcolm, Brother Malcolm or El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz had spoke about this power concept, the importance of power, you know, in which everybody acts and responds to power. So then my understanding of power is that, again, it's the ability to be able to do whatever it is that you want to do, when and where you want it to be done. If we observe that in the world today, we see different groups of people or races that are able to do that. And if we look at them from a lens, those groups of people and their ability to be able to do what it is that they want to do, for one, of course, again, they, for example, speak their own languages. And there's many other things, but in the context of the book is they have their own spirituality, they have their own religion based on their culture, and they worship, for example, the god or gods that look like them. That is how I introduce the topic of Afrocentric Patara Afrocentric Pan-African Patara Set. Again, Patara Set is another name for the African traditional religion. That's the collective term. And that's how I set up the introduction for people to see the reality of it in importance to their understanding of God. And then with chapter two again just shows that. After I finish talking about that, I show that I give a racial and cultural test.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so wow, that's a lot to digest, and this is why we will have to have more of these conversations, because you know it's so. There's so many areas there that really need to be explored to a greater extent. Mm-hmm. There's also, I think, the need to do kind of a redefining of certain things. Now going back to one of the points that you mentioned, and this is something that I did note in terms of your book, and that is you pointed out, and you know, many have had this conversation before. We've even talked about it to some degree here on New Day, but many can agree that generally speaking, a people will fashion or identify themselves with a creator, God, or what have you, that looks like them.
Right.
Now, again, we were not afforded that. We were not allowed that, meaning those who were here in this country, subjugated, we were not able to view life or engage in things that looked like us. That was not allowed. That was not thought of. That was not taught for many, many, many years. And so one has to really, you know, examine that reality today. The other thing, and so again in your book, you definitely pointed that out, that these various other groups of peoples, i.e. races of people, all had depict their idea of God / creator in their own image, meaning the Asian people, you can kind of look at their eyes and see that, you know, Buddha and others and so forth. Right, the
I'm
way
glad
they
my
look.
I'm glad my came out very well, because you're speaking to the purpose of why I wanted to put that in chapter two and the observations that you get from it. But go ahead and continue, sister, because that's
so
good.
So my point is that we are the only, well, I won't say the only ones, but certainly we are definitely a group of people, those who have had to be in America, so called place called America. Because of our ancestors being primarily kidnapped, brought here, those who were already here were still subjugated, etc. The point is that in itself should raise questions, or at least some other examination. And then the flip side of that is the reluctancy to do so. So.
And-
Before you respond to that, my brother, so here's what I began to realize in my studies and research, that from an African, kinetic, whichever you want to refer to it, perspective, some of these disciplines were one and all in the same. Or if not in the same, they had sections of things. So, for example, religion. Now, if anybody pays attention, you will hear two different things. One, religion, and institutionalized religion. What's the difference? You see? What's the difference? So when we say religion / spirituality, there is more of a connection to that as opposed to institutionalized religion, which is in a category in and of itself. So then you have this thing called divinity, theology. All of these things really are very different. They're connected, but they're different. So at some point, and that's why we have you, my brother, and others, we're going to have to break this stuff down to bring about the clarity.
Yeah. And you bring up some excellent points, which is why I wanted to, again, talk about religion and spirituality from a very simplistic approach first. And I'll say it like this. You have to walk before you crawl. And in order to do that, that's why I introduced, just to open up the book, some basic concepts. Sure, we can go in, we can talk about the concept of institutionalized religion. But most importantly, when we talk about the concept, how does that concept apply to us here, you know, right now? And we can definitely get into that. However, though, for those individuals that, again, are, for example, maybe curious about African religion, they should be able to pick up my book and be able to go into it and see the way of going about just to getting their feet wet to step into it. But it's not just that too. Yeah. It is also advanced. But again, just the way I write it, I present it in such a way that, again, it's easy to follow. Now, to your earlier point, you brought up many different things. Matter of fact, as you were talking, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was actually thinking about the whole intent about reparations. I know that, again, we've been talking about collaborating about this and everything, but reparations actually speaks to that. As a people in the context of American history, up until, you know, the Civil Rights Act, the Second Civil Rights Act of 1964, for the most part, we were in survival mode, in which case, you know, we had to put aside, for example, and I write this too in the reparations book, we had to put aside the practice of our African culture and religion. And so wasn't a focus on that. And as a result, that is one of the main reasons that reparations is due in that particular context, because, again, you know, we had not been able to heal to be able to, you know, for example, go back and, you know, study and practice, because we had to deal with, again, just so many different social injustices that were occurring. However, now out of that, again, we're out of the civil rights movement, and we're no longer in that survival mode. And then what that does is that presents what I call the lingering consequences, because now that our ancestors fought to get to where we are at this point, it's again, we're now having to go back, for example, and as my book presents, to, you know, introduce this or to now teach it. And so that's part of, for example, you talk about the restitution. That's part of the repair, the mental or psychological repair is, like you said, for lack of a better term, now that we're able to do it, many of us will not accept it. You know, we won't accept the truth, you know, because again, we only know, for example, religion and Christianity. That's synonymous. However, there's many different, for one, there's many different religions in the world. But most importantly, too, if we wanted to even be more specific with that, there are religions and gods specific to race and culture. So, yeah, there's many different religions, but most importantly, the religion that you practice and the God that you worship should look like you in one extent and should describe or relate to your African culture.
Right. Okay. Well, we obviously are going to have some regular sessions, and so I dare say I think at least once a month we're going to have to go into some real in-depth kind of analysis, some simplistic stuff, but also some in-depth stuff because the damage that has been done it has to really be critically dealt with, examined, and we've got to look at how we're going to bring about the kinds of changes and remedies, needless to say, that has, you know, been caused that needs to be addressed. So let's do this, my brother. Family, we're going to open up the lines for you all. If you have a question or a comment at this point, we certainly are going to give you the opportunity to chime in, to join us for this conversation. This is just scratching the surface, needless to say. There's a lot of stuff here that really has to be brought out because Dr. Hasim has mentioned that he spoke about Dr. Johnson, who deals with psychology. Well, when you begin to look closer into the field or the discipline of religion, you will see a close connection to psychology. All of your religion majors have to take courses in psychology, and not just in terms of the history of it, you see. And so there's a real connection going on with that stuff, and that's why certain things are able to, shall we say, be impressed in a certain kind of way because there are psychological applications that are also involved. And again, we will be breaking some of that down to you in the very near future. In the meantime, let's do this. Let's get ready to go to our live line. And again, family, if you have a question, a comment, we're going to welcome you to bring that in. And let me see. Oh, before we do that, my brother, please share with our family where they can get the book, how they can get the book.
Yes. Again, the book is available on Amazon. All my books are available on Amazon. So if you go on Amazon, you're able to purchase them online.
Okay, very good. And, of course, the one that we are talking about now, please give them the title of that.
Yes, the book that we're currently talking about now is Afrocentric Patara Set, The Power of God and Religion.
All right, very good. Okay, and we'll repeat that for you again before we close the session out, family, in case you didn't get that. And, oh, by the way, I didn't do it tonight, but next week we'll definitely open up the chat room for you so that those of you who are listening online, you'll be able to communicate by way of the chat room. We do have one. We haven't used it as much as we used to, but we're going to start using it again, okay, so that those, again, who are listening online will be able to join us in the chat room with your comments and questions and interact with one another. Okay, let's go to our live line. And remember, family, if you have a question, comment, thought, et cetera, you can press 1. and we'll be more than happy to bring you in. With that said, we're going to go to caller at 8279. 8279, welcome to this segment of New Day, and your mic is open.
Ashe, greetings, peace and blessings, Empress.
Hey, greetings, Brother Captain. How you be tonight?
Oh, I'm grateful. I'm thankful. I'm happy to be here. How you doing?
You know, I always the same, you know, as long as we can continue to do this work and make some headway, listen, it's all good.
That's right. We're going to get this work done. Hey, peace, brother.
That's
how you
right.
feeling? As you were talking, I was putting your book again. Could you tell me that title? Because I wasn't getting
yes.
it in the search engine here.
Yes, it's Afrocentric Pan-African, Power I Set, The Power of God and Religion.
Okay. Yeah, because yeah, another one was coming up.
It's Afrocentric,
yes.
not Afro. Okay, I want to make sure
okay.
people heard that
yeah,
clearly. It's
Afrocentric. Yeah,
it's A-F-R-I, not O. A-F-R-I.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Because this book, Afrocentricity, the Theory of Social Change, keep coming up. Okay. A-F-R-I.
C-E-N-T-R-I-C. So it's Afrocentric.
Okay. Yeah.
Got you.
Okay.
Afrocentric.
Pan-African,
Afrocentric, Pan-African, mm-hmm, with a C, Pan-African. Some people do use K, but this one is C-A-N.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, and the next part is Patah, which is P-A-T-A-H-R-A. A-S-E-T.
A-F-E, you said?
A-S-E-T. A-S-
oh,
A-S-E-T. A-S-E-T.
Okay. Got you.
So it's Afrocentric, Pan-African, Patara, A-S-E-T.
Nice. Okay, got you. Definitely, brother. I just want to let you know, it definitely piqued my interest, and I'm going to support. I just was trying to get it right so I could save it in here in my phone. Got you, Amazon. Yeah, that got it right. That got it
Thank
right,
you,
right.
Okay.
Most definitely, brother.
Okay.
I definitely will be supporting.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Most definitely.
All right. Thank you, Brother Captain. So is there a question or a comment or a thought based on what you've heard so far? And I know, again, this is just scratching the surface. There's a whole lot more that we're going to be talking about in the future. But is there anything that just kind of piqued your interest right now?
Yeah, because, you know, this is definitely a real interest of mine, you know, in the beginning. Well, first I'm going to ask you, what inspired you to even – put this together?
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of inspiration there. As I mentioned on the last show, I've been very fortunate, thanks to the creator, I've been fortunate to travel to the African continent and to various countries and visit the people or visit our cousins, they would say, or our brothers and sisters over there. And, you know, ever since I've gone, I've had an interest in African traditional religion. However, that goes back to when I was 19 or 20, I actually went into the African Rites of Passage program when I was in college, and my teacher was an African traditional healer. And so as a result of that, my training has always been in the area of African religion and spirituality. So that's what sort of inspired this book. To write this book through my own experiences as well as my travels throughout the African continent.
And let me give a sidebar, Brother Kevin. Let me give a sidebar to that. So as our brother Dr. Hassim mentioned, his teacher and the elder that facilitated rites of passage and so forth just happened to be the person who wrote the Willie Lynch letter. Now, I know for some that might burst a few bubbles, because some really still think that the letter was written by this white man named Willie Lynch, but unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you care, it was not. It was written by a black man, and his name happened to be Dr. Kwabi Nan Ashanti. You can look it up. It's there. And so when you hear our brother make reference to, you know, someone who had an impact on his life in terms of, you know, providing him with information, inspiration, and so forth, in that regard, he's referring to Dr. Kwabi Nan Ashanti. And I would be remiss, too,
yes,
if I did not mention his name in that regard, because, you know, he, for both of us, he certainly was very and still is very inspirational in that, again, he is an installed Nana and healer. Nana means priest in this particular situation, from the tradition of Akan, and is a healer as well, as many priests in our traditions are. They're not just, you know, people that you go to hear your confession or whatever. They literally are trained to do certain other kinds of things for healing, with herbs, with other forms of traditional, you know, methods and healing and so forth. So, again, I just wanted to give folks that little sidebar and clarity.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to ask you, brother, could you – I'm looking for more enlightenment on the deity Set Typhon.
Well, if you're looking for that, that is why I wrote that the book in part. And Dr. Soulet provided a great observation, although I didn't go into depth with it. In chapter 2 of the book, actually, is where I give a test. And it's interesting, as she read the book and went over chapter 2, she noticed some different characteristics. And the one thing that I would like to say in you trying to be interested in deities, so to speak, or what I call gods, is that, you know, there's certain characteristics. In other words, you want each group of people, and even if you subdivide them into ethnic groups, they create images of what you call deities or gods within their own images. For example, I know a lot of – well, not a lot. I know there are some people in the African community that speak to the faith traditions of the Dogon. And if you look at the Dogon and their traditions and heritage, their deities or the images that they create of the gods or the spirits of the gods, they resemble them in some way, physically, characteristically, in how they look, how they dress, and things of that nature. So when you get the book and you start reading it and you go through chapter 2, that can be sort of like your first steps to help you sort of organize, you know, your involvement with other gods. Because one of the things that I've learned, too, is, you know, one of the things that Christianity says, or the Bible says, is that, you know, you should not make, and I'm paraphrasing this, you should not make images of your gods. Well, with Afrocentricity, again, there's a correction in the information we get. And for us, that's something that we do. So you should make images of your gods, but if you're going to do that, then it needs to be in the image of you as a race. So yes, as an African person, but even more specifically, in the traditions of the culture. For example, the clothes you wear, the in some cultures they wear earrings, or they put things around their necks. You know, that is more specific in terms of how you should create an image of the gods and how you understand them. So in part, that's why I put chapter 2 in there, so that you can get an understanding for your racial awareness, the different characteristics, as Dr. Soulet was talking about, the nose, the cheeks, and things of that nature, so you get an understanding perhaps when you look at yourself in the mirror you can get an idea of perhaps where you come from, the African continent. So that's what I would say in that way, brother, in helping you to decide and learn more about the African gods or what you call deities that represent you.
Understood. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Thank you, Brother Captain. Okay, we've got one more, and then we're going to get ready to close this session out, and hopefully our sister will be ready to join us soon. I don't see her in queue yet. We're talking about our sister, Dr. Val Vincent, and hold on. We're going to go next to caller 5065. 5065, welcome to the segment of New Day, and your mic is open.
Yes, God bless you, Brother Eric. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Eric. How you doing?
Oh, good. I still listen to you every Saturday. Just busy doing paperwork and computer work, so I'll get a chance to call in, but I listen every Saturday.
it's so good to hear you.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, I'll be sending that donation in, too. So just wanted to catch up with you on that. I'd like to congratulate your guest on the work he's doing. And in terms of both of y'all mentioned the practicality of it all. And my question is, because I would love to see Afrocentricity become more widespread, acknowledged, and practiced by our people. Has there been any work in terms of like Afrocentric approaches to, say, gardening, Afrocentric approaches to, say, construction, or Afrocentric approaches to doing business? That way people can put their hands on it and apply it on a day-to-day basis. And from that, maybe even determine do some research. And, statistics is just one way of knowing things, but even doing research on the benefits that people experience from practicing our Afrocentric life.
And that's a great question, brother. Go ahead.
I just want to say before you respond to that, Dr. Hasim, I just want to say to Brother Eric, there's two sort of schools of thought that we're referring to. Now, and you just said Afrocentric.
Oh, yeah.
And that
I
is
like
pretty much right. Yeah. But see, that's pretty much what is the mainstream of things. One of the things that my brother and I have kind of been given the assignment to do is to further develop the Afrocentric approach, which he has already written. He already has three books now. And as we grow and develop, certainly what you're referring to, now don't get me wrong, there are some of that for Afrocentric. There's really actually here right in Philadelphia an Afrocentricity institute or center. So again, we're kind of in a just slightly different mode with Afrocentric. Note, there's the I instead of the O. And that is something that is now being further developed. We're working on now some of the aspects. In fact, Dr. Hasim, I think what Brother Eric has just suggested for me, and I'm proposing this to you, we need to now develop an Afrocentric center or development center or something like that. He just like gave that right to us to do, to add into this other piece that we're working on.
Well, I do want to say, and that was a great explanation, Dr. Phile. I do want to say, Brother Eric, that there, think about it this way. You have your hand, and your hand has fingers, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at the different terms, Afro, Afri, African-centered, and the different variations of that, let's say that is analogous to your hand. All the approaches collectively. However, if we were to look at each of those approaches, they have different concepts that are associated with them that relates to the practice of African culture and behavior, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I preface that to then say, to answer your question about understanding these approaches to practice, essentially, if you look up, for example, just Google African gardening, you can get so many different results. Now, what I would do as an Afrocentric Pan-Africanist, I would relate those particular concepts that I found to the concepts that I was learned and taught of the Afrocentric Pan-African approach. Whereas, again, if it was an Afrocentrist, for example, he or she would do the same based on the concepts of what developed that particular approach.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So that is where the similarities and differences rely. They all relate to the continent and the culture and behaviors. Now, but in that way, of course, we again adapt it to meet our needs here in America.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I would love
that
because.
With that said, what I'm hearing Brother Eric say, though, in reality, is that still needs to be compiled or formulated in such a way, you know, to bring about greater simplicity or capability of application. That's going to have to be done. It's like anything else. At some point, stuff has to be structured, put together, put in a way, replied, both relatively easily, as well as, you know, the advanced aspects of it. So there's no getting around that. I see the hip.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Brother Eric.
Yeah, because like you all were saying, that's the word I really appreciate, apply. You know, we have to be able to apply something to really, you know, value it even more so. And if I think a lot of times whatever it might be on a theoretical level, like you all had mentioned earlier, but once we're able to apply it, then I think people can understand it better, like you all have said, and then evaluate it and appreciate it much more, and then I think that will help it to spread more also.
So. I agree.
No doubt. The Men and Women March was a perfect example because when I first did it, I thought – that initially, particularly the sisters, if they saw this, that they would then, you know, it would trigger, it would do da da da, and then unfortunately later I realized and was even told, if I don't structure this in such a way that people can see from an instructional standpoint or da da da, that it's not going to have the kind of momentum or impact. So that's what I've been doing over these years. But like you know, many, sometimes you think that if you do this or that in a certain way, you know, that's the way it's going to be. And it will for some. But then for others, they really need structure.
And again, that's the whole purpose of that book, to speak to your point, is that, as Dr. Chile is saying, is that some people, they don't need this book, for example. They can go online or go to their library or self-talk to then practice African traditional religion. However, some, you have to give them a different piece of fruit, so to speak, so that they can be able to take in the information and put it together in a practical way in their lives. And so that's how I wrote this. For those individuals, like for you, Eric, but also for the scholars as well. But just put it simply so that you can see what it is and what it entails to begin to practice it daily.
Well, beautiful. Well, I'm going to jump off the line now and make a donation. I encourage
all right.
All
thank you.
Make
a donation. Thank you. Always good to hear you and connect
all right.
with
God
you.
God bless both of you.
Take
care now.
Thank you. Okay, family, we have one more, and Carla, we're going to come to you in a minute at 9498. But before we do, I have to make sure that folks know that our brother does teach at a university, or you know. And so, please share with our family, our brother Hasim, where you teach, where you are found on a regular basis. Of course, I mean not so much because of COVID,
right.
But still.
Right now, I'm on a regular basis. I'm still quarantined. However, I do teach at the Florida Agricultural and Mechanical University in Tallahassee, Florida.
Okay. Also known as the Great Samu.
Yes, that's the Great Samu. That's correct. Thank you.
And I say that because family and Brother Eric kind of brought it to my brain. You know, we've been talking, Dr. Hasim and I and a few others, we've been talking about how we're going to connect
in other projects, and one of them happened to be growing food, agriculture, which is the college, of course, that he's at. And oh, by the way, Dr. Captain, this would apply to you as well. So we've been working on, of course, the urban pieces to this, but on a larger scale, we're looking at doing some special projects. And so the college that Brother Hashim is involved at or teaches at, we're looking at that particular institution because it's called what? The School of Agriculture? That would be ideal. So to partner with them certainly would be, you know, just like right on point. And I think, if I remember correctly, Dr. Hashim, you mentioned that, you know, that there's land, acreage, that would enable us to really do something, to really, you know, see how we can use the torpedo pot and other things that we want to do. And so we just want to put that out there to you, family, so you can see that we've been working. We've been working.
Yes, Dr. Chinoisa, you have brilliant ideas, brilliant, very practical ideas that can happen. It's a matter of you know, building those relationships and those other people seeing it. Because, I see, you know, from my discussions, I definitely see the applicability of a lot of those ideas to be able to work.
And, again, since that is an institution that focuses on that type of thing, it would be an excellent partnership. So we just have to wait until the COVID thing, you know, because like you said, you're still in quarantine, so we just have to wait until we're able to really, you know, move about and to, you know, connect physically again in a more, you know, productive manner. Okay, we got one more caller. Caller again, you are at 9498. And 9498, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Oh, hello, Sister Filet. Hello, family. How you feel?
Hey, brother.
Good to see y'all. Good to hear you.
Good to hear you,
brother.
Too,
thank you for sharing the African free. Can you be spiritual without religion? Number one.
Yeah.
And how did we lose all the stuff that you have in your book and the greatness of Africa, Akbulan, the different names that the Arab and with Islam and European with Christianity, how did we lose that? How did they come in with religion and we lost what we had and built with pyramids and the greatness all through that continent? How do we lose it to Islam, Christianity, and letting invaders just come in? Because I've been reading over the destruction of black civilization and I'm just getting some better understanding. How do we lose that greatness that you're talking about in Africa and even in America?
Well, as Dr. Chinoisa said earlier, we can be spiritual without religion. And in being spiritual, well, as a result of that, naturally, we are also the greatest humanitarians in the world, to the point of it being a disease, where we allow others into our circle, so to speak, to the detriment of ourselves. So that's the short answer of that. That's how we lost. Because, as you alluded to, you're pointing to the pyramids, for example, that exists throughout the world now. However, you know, a lot of times the study is in what is what today is known as Egypt, but was called Kemet. Is that you see the genius, the mathematical precision. And again, I can go into another discussion just about the mathematics in general, because we created the mathematics. But that, from that, that genius, the one thing that has been to the detriment of ourselves is, again, welcoming others in to our own detriment, you know, welcoming them in, treating them like one of ourselves. Then, of course, as they learn everything they can, and they use it to their advantage. And one thing that I read recently, and I thought Dr. Shaikhan Tajiyop said it very, very well, was that we've always been on the defensive, too. That's a lot of things, too. If you look at a lot of the invasions, and not a lot of the invasions, but most of them that are documented, we were always on the defensive, not really on the offensive. And in some ways, that type of strategy is good. You know, we see, although, for example, the United States had a huge military, when they went to the Vietnam War, and Dr. Filet can talk about this even more because she has her brother was served in Vietnam. My teacher was in Vietnam, and he told me some stories, was that to a certain extent, you know, even by the Viet Cong being on the defensive, they were able to wage a successful war. And successful in the sense that it hurt the morale of the American soldiers. However, though, you know, nowadays, really, if given the advance in weaponry, if the United States or any other country wanted to evade them, you know, they just really have to push a button. You know, there's no need or do other attacks or other type of warfare. But generally, again, that being on the defensive will not be able to evolve or advance the race. And so that's one thing, again, that speaks to this idea about Afrocentricity and it being connected to the philosophy of African cultures on the continent, of going back and looking at those instances, for example, and making corrections so that, again, when you grow and develop as the world changes. So that is the long answer, but the short answer is again, we allow them to come in. We're welcoming. We welcome strangers, and as a result of that, a lot of times we do not know the intent of other strangers, and when they get the information and what they do with it.
Because I was in a religious institution.
Mm-hmm.
And it was black folks and philosophy with black this and black that and our people and our this and that and the Bible and on the side of the wall they had the Last Supper with all the white guys sitting at the table. And I'm going, something ain't right with this. But I hope, I don't think we're going to ever come out of what we're coming out of until we get rid of the religions that was whooped and threatened on us with death if we didn't convert and have to go back to where we came from. I don't think we're going to ever get out of what's happening.
And you know, and that's a very good observation. And what I would say to that too, brother, is that's why in another book I wrote, Reparations: The Afrocentric Pan-African Approach. Well, the Afrocentric Pan-African Approach to Reparations. I speak to your point and how you sort of said it is that in order to heal a nation, you must have a religion. And what the elements of those religions, for example, as you spoke to, you spoke to, it was black this, black that. But then when you saw the art, for example, and it had people of a different race, that is one aspect that encompasses religion, like you said. And if that aspect is not in congruence with your race and your race spirituality and your culture, it's not going to work. It's sort of like creating, I'll put it even simpler. It's sort of like, for example, if you're going to bake an apple pie, you're going to have apples in it. You know, if you have peaches or other things in it, it's not an apple pie. So in the same way, those
it's not an apple pie, it's a peach pie.
It's a peach pie, exactly. And so that's what we do a lot. Like, even online, I see this idea again. And I'm not putting anybody down, so if any of you listeners hear it, I'm just speaking the facts. The truth is that we try to make Christianity African, or we try to make Islam African, or we try to make Judaism, I'm just talking about those three religions, African, or even within our own religions, we try to, there's nothing wrong with, well, let me back up. Let me say there's nothing wrong with borrowing and picking, but you have to be able to use it. And if you can't use it for your race, then you should disregard it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And John Henry Clark says that it's not going to use it to your advantage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before I let you go, Chuck Schumer, during the stimulus, he thought he put himself as a Jew first and siphoned all that money from that stimulus to them Jewish schools and this and that, because he put himself as a Jew first.
Right.
But we got black Jews and they didn't, you know, so, yeah. Well, what it is what it is.
It is what it is, and from the context of religion, like you said, that's why religion is so powerful. With religion, you look out, based on your own race, religious God, you're going to look, that looks like you, you're going to therefore look out for those same people that look like you. And that's it. Mm-hmm. That's the facts of it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, brother. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, brother. All right.
Thank you, Sister Clay.
So, wow. Now, I'm not seeing our sister in queue, so it looks like we have more time. I'm not sure what happened to Dr. Layla Brown Vincent, but it's okay. We can continue with our dialogue. We probably need to, and that's all good. Now, here's something. Oh, wait a minute. Let me see. Do I see? Nope, don't see it there yet. Okay, so here's some other thing we want to also add to this conversation, and it is the social, what I call the socio-political structure, and within that there is, of course, religion, philosophy, politics, and so forth. And so some of these things, and again, I'm just going to kind of go to the surface of it, but some of these things, in my opinion and from my observations, have not only linked, but some of it has flowed over into some of the other areas to a degree where it has become very problematic. So essentially, the political dynamic within a society or a system, because of the link to the religious institution, we now have these conflicts, you see, of influence or inappropriate influence or oppressive influence and so forth and so on. So all this stuff has to be broken down at some point to a greater extent, so that we are able to get not only better clarity, but also able to come up with some better solutions. What are your thoughts about that, Dr. Hassan?
Well, actually, I was thinking about earlier what you said about the new president of Tanzania, Ms. Shamia. Again, I was just looking at pictures with her, and here she is. You know, she's the head of the government after the brother passed away. And in thinking about the politics of the country and looking at how she dresses, pretty much, I mean, she is, her political activities is associated with Islam, you know? I mean, she wears the head wrap. Mm-hmm. You can clearly tell that that is, you know, her power. However, again, I don't know what relations she has. I heard that she's not as, at least from what the media is reporting, she's more open more balanced.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps we'll see in the days that pass by how she interacts within the local politics of the country. But yeah, that's just an observation offhand based off our discussion and thinking about politics.
Mm-hmm. So, wow. This is all going to be very, and thank you for, because I think you were the first that I got that information from, Dr. Hassim.
Right.
when
brother made transition. Yeah, so thank you for that. We have such a wonderful network. In fact, our Black Asian News and Information Network is growing. We should very soon have some new components for folks that will really enable us to kick this out. Of course, Sister Keisha and Brother Mike, Community Cop, and others are doing wonderful, wonderful work on their platforms. We want to bring some of this stuff together to a greater extent to start collaborating. Brother Lee, of course, with Africa on the Move. You know, we're really striving now to put these pieces together and really provide some consistent, ongoing kinds of information and services that's going to provide truth to power for our people. So again, brother, and again, this is what our people are doing. They send us a lot of, Sister Gabrielle, Sister Manira. I mean, we get so many good articles and other kinds of information that our brothers and sisters are researching, and now we want to compile that stuff and make sure it's readily available. So folks, keep that in mind. You know, as you're running across articles, you're going to soon have somewhere that you can literally send it and share, you know, with the masses. Okay, let's go back for one moment. Now, the other thing that I kind of noticed in looking at the book, you did say in the book, and I'm just going to say this because you said it, now this might ruffle a few feathers, and it's not our entire family, but we want to get to the truth to as best as possible, and not the truth because that's what I believe or Dr. Hasim believes, but because there's factual information that gives you that kind of reality or at least insight.
Right.
So with that said,
1 + 1 = 2.
You said in your book,
right,
and you just kind of repeated it. I'm just going to clarify for a moment, but it was indicated that, one, Islam and Christianity both are not African religions. You said that in the
book.
Correct.
And
that's
the truth.
In that conversation.
That's the truth. And again, notice, like you said, there's no, I didn't talk about the Prophet Muhammad. I didn't talk about the Nation of Islam or, you know, any particular religious denominations of either Christianity or Islam. However, when we make that statement and the statement is assessed, that is true. It's those religions are not African religions.
Okay. So now, the next question has to be, if they're not African religions, why are Africans, Black folks, following them?
And it goes back to part of the reason, part of what one of the callers called in, I think it was Brother Eric, if I'm not mistaken, was that in part we were the ones that allowed for these religions to come in, our cooperation and acceptance of these different peoples and what constitute these people's, you know, culture and religion. We allowed that to come in, and over time, we mixed it in part. In some parts, we completely accepted it. For example, there's a lot of talk about Mansa Musa and compared to in Egypt. And believe it or not, there was a lot of trade going on there between the traditional religion that existed and Islam, of people that practiced Islam that came there. There were no mosques there until one was built, in which case then the control of the country, those in control of that area adopted that religion. And again, that's when they, practiced or mixed it with that traditional African religion. So in part, that's where you get the most Africans adopting it. Then also, of course, you have some that you know, that are not associated with what you would consider the true Islam. You know, you have, even within Africa, you have different brotherhoods
right.
practice it, but still, again, the religion of the Islam is not African. It's not African. And as I said last week, I use the word sometimes, for lack of a better word, I put African before it. A lot of times we do that because, again, as we come and know and we experience concepts and ideas, and we realize, okay, this is not African, but then to speak to the difference between that and that which is African, we usually attach the word African to it. So when I say African Islam, that is the practice of Islam, whereas the practice of the polytheistic version or form of Islam, so to speak, that was in existence in Africa before Islam came into the country, before what we know as Islam into the country by the Prophet Muhammad.
Right, right. So essentially what you're saying, just
or the continent, excuse me, that's the country, it's the continent.
Right. So you're saying that there was something that existed that people were practicing or, embracing or what have you, and it had certain tenets, it had certain characteristics, and so forth and so on, but it was not called Islam. However, once the Arabs came into the continent and saw this, they then did some deviation of it and called it Islam. Would that be safe to say? Okay.
Right. Well, that would be safe to say to an extent. Well, I would say instead of the Arabs, I would say the Turks. Those people, what we call today the Turks, that come from that area of Syria, Turkey, in and around those areas, that left those areas, came down, as I mentioned in my book, came down to what we call today as Saudi Arabia, came down to there into North Africa, and then began preaching again their idea of what is known today as Islam, and then again it being accepted on both parts too. That's another thing, because even when the Prophet Muhammad came down there, there was an exchange. There wasn't. You have to understand that he had to, there was African Patara set, so you're not going to, the changes or the things that you do happen over time. And during that time, again, people, accepted certain things, they kept certain things, because I found recently, and this is actually when I was finishing the book, that actually a version of what we call African Islam or Patara set was actually practiced up until around 1845. Is actually when one of the last temples of the polytheistic gods of Arabia, or what they call Saudi Arabia today, was still in existence until it got destroyed. So I was locating some additional resource information on it. However, at this time, I've been unable to locate it.
And so going back to why you call or have your focus point on Patara Aset, because those were the names of the deities, or I tend to call it essences. And again, just for the sake of dispelling or removing some of the taintedness that has been applied to the word God and deity. And so, again, because I like physics, relate to physics in a way that some people might relate to, certain other concepts. So I say essences, because, again, our practices were connected to nature, right? So, again, you're saying Patara Aset because for us as a people or descendants of a people, these are some of the names of the essences of the representatives of divinity in our culture. And note, it wasn't just male oriented.
That's correct.
Ptah, Ra, Aset.
Right, right. And I'm actually glad you brought that up. You actually brought something to mind, because last week when I was sort of giving an introduction, I was, again, meeting the audience where they were at and using God, and I mentioned him. And in reality, it's male and male and female, you know, not just him, you know. It's male and female in terms of the creator.
Wow. And you know, that right there in itself is a mind blower for most to think in that manner. That's like, woo, you talk about revolutionary thinking. Try that.
It is. It is.
That's real revolutionary thinking.
It would be very, very interesting. Like you said, when you announced that the president of Tanzania was a woman, you know, to me, I thought, oh, okay, we have another, you know, another African president. My thought wasn't going to the fact that she was a woman, because in traditional African culture, you know, there would be no thought about feminism, because through the culture, it's the same, you know, male and female. And then as through the works of people that have been studying Egypt, they found several dynasties that were ruled by African women, you know, so that's not anything out of the ordinary in terms of my worldview.
I say. Okay.
And again, so again, relates to, again, how you, as you use, see the essence of the supernatural or the higher power. The same.
Right.
There's no disconnect there, you know.
Right.
It all has a similar relationship or a similar association.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, family. Well, we actually have a good 10 or so more minutes. If there's any other comments or questions that you have, please feel free to press 1 now. And we'll certainly bring you in. I'm not sure what happened with our other guests, but it's okay.
I feel fortunate, man. I have the whole show today.
Yes, we were able to extend this dialogue, so it's definitely okay.
Wow.
All right, we do have another caller that has a question or a comment. So, caller, we're coming to you at 2274. 2274. Hold on one moment. Okay, there we go. 2274. Welcome to the segment of New Day, and your mic is open.
How you doing, Empress C?
Hey, how you doing, Brother Adrian?
I'm better than great, and greetings to your guests. I'm glad so many great things were brought out as far as spirituality and religion, because the thing is, black people, African people, made Christianity, Islam, New Orleans, whatever religion that we practice now, it was black people, African people that made it a real religion, because we gave it a duty. And in giving it a duty, what we have to do is give religion a duty as well as organize it militarily, so therefore we can protect it. And I'm glad the brother pointed out that there were a lot of things that we did that were great. But when we allowed infiltrators in, that's how it was corrupted. So therefore, we in our community at this point, with churches, with mosques, whether we're Jehovah Witnesses, whatever we practice, we got to organize it to protect it. So therefore, we can take it to another level in several ways, including health, economically, and several other things. We also brought health and nutrition to religion as a practice. So a lot of things that we made it better because of the African genius that we always practiced since we've been brought here slaves.
All right. Brother Hussein.
Thank you for coming, brother. You brought up actually a very good point, brother, in terms of the militarization, so to speak, of religion. I mean, that's a whole nother topic, and I sort of talk a little bit about it in the book about this idea of missionaries and mercenaries. Mercenaries speaks exactly to the point that you made. It's about really recognizing religion as a military weapon. I mean, and we know the famous quote from was the brother out of Jomo Kenyatta out of my mind right now, Kenya, right?
And Kenya.
We talked about
Kenya.
Yeah, out of Kenya, right? We know that, but then it's through the missionaries that allow for, you know, a way of controlling, for example, a group of people or a particular country. Matter of fact, I'll never forget, actually, my first visit to the continent, I flew out of North Carolina to New York, we booked a flight through Ethiopian Airlines, and so we had to fly through Rome. We didn't get off. We just flew through Rome to get gas. They landed. We got gas. Then we flew across the continent over to Ethiopia, to Addis Ababa. But during that 20-hour trip, which was long, that was when I met, actually, there was a whole, on that plane, there were like several or eight groups of people going over to do Christian mission. And at that time, I was very raw and young, you know, and so I was like, why are you going over to the continent to introduce them to Jesus, for example, when they already have a God, you know? You know, and that's how I was at that particular time. And so they, you know, we had a great conversation, and, you know, they of course, they were stuck in their ways, and, you know, but that idea is, you know, you're right on and exact. I mean, even look today when with the President Biden's talk with China, and, you know, America accusing China of these human rights and abuses, and then China saying, you know, what about you too, America? However, in that, they noted, for example, that China treats certain Chinese Muslims in a certain way. And when I thought about that and I heard that, and again, you know, when you listen to media, you take it, you know, you gather the information and you see whether or not it's true. But when I heard that, I thought, well, you know, China is doing what a country is supposed to be doing when you have a certain, and what I mean by this is they monitor the foreign religions that come into their country. You have to monitor these religions, because if you don't monitor these religions, then that's when you get, again, the infiltration or the eventual takeover through your country, because those religion is very, very powerful, you know. So, yeah, to your point, the militarization of religion is a whole other concept, and is very, very important.
All right. Thank you, Brother Adrian. So with that said, I think at some point we need to also bring about some clarity to what a culture is, meaning is there a difference, meaning, okay, here is a group's culture. So yes. With that said, within that culture exists what some call folkway mores or you know, just way of life, period.
Right.
So now...
Right.
We have this thing called religion, which is connected to an entity or a society or a system, culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you begin to put it in that kind of manner, you can begin to see what has maybe happened here. Now, going back to what you two brothers are saying, it's very interesting that, for the most part, it is European and others who took their religion and then turned it into or connected it to warfare. So do you really see how this has developed in that the Christians had the Crusades, the Islamic folk had something called submit by the sword.
Yeah.
Right? Other entities had some other similar stuff. So essentially when we saw religion being applied as other people defined it and did it, it tends to kind of lend to murdering folk.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well,
trying to make them do this. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and another way of looking at that, too, is given my last example would be the idea of environmental security. And that's what we want, too. And what I mean by that is, any information that you take in, you want to be able to use it to provide a safe environment for you. And in this context, we're just talking about religion and that and religion in and of itself, that ability to use it provides a level of environmental security, both domestic and abroad, you know. And so that is it. Now, sometimes, like you said, it resorts to violence. Other times it can be, you know, it can be very, very, well, I can say from the outside looking in, it can be very passive, but it's not. It's just as destructive as dropping a nuclear bomb. You're not seeing the effects in the short term. You're seeing it over the long term in terms of the religion and the ability to be able to, you know, protect the interest of whatever group is practicing that religion. But that's one of the reasons why I said earlier you cannot throw out the baby with the bathwater in that case, because, yeah, you need to be aware of certain concepts and things dealing with other cultures, but also, too, you know, looking at what is working for these groups of people and how, again, it can be applied. So, for example, as I said, a lot of times as Shikanta Jiop had mentioned that we a lot of times we're on the defensive, but in order to advance and evolve, one of the things is that's one of the things that we have to practice is the idea of missionary work. Batara said missionary work. I had mentioned that a couple years back. It's doing that same thing, promoting, you know, African traditional religion outside of the continent and elsewhere.
All right, Brother Adrian, anything else you want to add to that or any other comment you have?
No. Last comment I have is regardless of whatever your religion are, if you want to help uplift and advance black people, you have my total support.
Oh, thank you, bro.
All of you. Male, female, if you're black, if you want to uplift black people, you have my total support. That's my bottom line. We have to uplift each other and pray and make religion a duty so therefore we can advance as a people. And you have my total support, male, female, if you want to uplift the humanity of black people. Brother Adrian will give you his total support on whatever level you need, wherever I can.
All right. Thank you, brother. And to hear you say that, one of the thoughts that come to my mind is the idea of race first, you know. Like you said, some of those other things are important, but like you said, if it's about the race, then, hey, I'm there, and I'm willing to support it.
All right. Well, family, we've had a wonderful conversation, a wonderful dialogue, and certainly we will have to do more of this, and we will. Last week, I think it was, I asked Sister Angela to come in once a month, and let's have some dialogue, and not just dialogue, but really put some things in place to start dealing with financial development, wealth building, and so forth. Well, it seems like we're going to have to do a monthly session dealing with African Black spirituality. So, Dr. Haseem, you have started something here.
I guess I have. But again, I'm very appreciative. I was waiting to hear for the sister speak as well. However, hey, I got a blessing of a longer session.
Yes, yes. Well, we're going to definitely do some more. And thank you, Brother Adrian, for your input, and certainly Brother Eric and Brother Ray Ray. And family, we're going to close this session out. I'm going to go to Brother Adrian, see if he has any closing comments for us, and then we're going to have Dr. Haseem Kambui to close us out. Brother Adrian, your last comments for tonight.
All right. Dr. Kwasi Okwezi did a series about the African origin of African spirituality. So let's look at how we can advance as a people. And if anybody want to get in contact with me, you could subscribe for free to emediagc.com. That's emediagc.com, or call 225-571-2274. 225-571-2274. Email communitydefender@yahoohotmail.com. That's communitydefender@yahoohotmail.com. And you have my total support. Thank you, Empress. Thank you, brother.
Certainly. Thank you. All right. Dr. Haseem, you got it.
I got it, but I'm going to hand it back to you. If there's no other comments or no other questions, I'll let you close out, my dear sister.
All right. Well, before we do, again, give people the title of the book and how they can and how they can stay in touch with you. If you have a Facebook or email or Instagram, how they can, just keep up with what you're doing.
Yes, yes. My book, again, is entitled Afrocentric Pan-African, The Taraj Set. This is another book. This is actually a third book that I've written. There's the other book is Reparations, the Afrocentric Pan-African Approach, which I spoke about that last year. Again, I'm very appreciative to Dr. Philae for having me on and speaking about that. And then another book I wrote deals with Afrocentricity actually in education. So looking at the ongoing theoretical developments of all the approaches, and then particularly looking at, again, the approach that I've been speaking about over these last two books, the Afrocentric Pan-African Approach, to empower students in the educational system, regardless of whether it's independent, public, private. This is about, motivating them to wanting to go to wanting to learn and also increasing their behaviors. But all three books are available on Amazon.com. And if you want to reach out to me, my email is very simple. It's Haseem, Haseem, _K@hotmail.com. And my phone number as well, if you want to reach out and call me, because that is public information as well. It's 919-417-2640.
All right. Well, my brother, again, we thank you. We look forward to the next session. We're going to go more in depth into some of the areas that, of course, you're covering in the book. And we're going to go even beyond some of that in the future. And so we know that this is always a work in progress, but at least we have some great foundations and fundamentals to work with. So, again, thank you so much and appreciate your contribution and your work. And, family, we're going to close out as we open up with some words from the great Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Brother Haseem, I don't know if you heard when we opened up this program tonight, was our way of paying tribute and saluting our great sister, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, whose Earth Day was March the 18th. And so, you know, in that spirit, we wanted to, and I think we did, because we definitely talked about white supremacy in another context.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, we hit upon what has happened in the field or the area of religion / spirituality, impact that white supremacy and other things connected to it has had on us. So certainly this is a conversation that we shall continue. All right, family, we're going to close the session now. We want to remind everyone that you have another week. For those who want to be members, brothers, get your sister, your mom, your aunt, your daughter, get a membership for now the A Million Black Women Rising Federation. And let me tell you, we got some stuff we're getting ready to bring. It's going to be incredible. And just to give you all a little hint, next year, of course, is our 25-year anniversary. We're getting ready, starting this year. We won't announce it just yet, but we're going to start collecting pieces of fabric, because what we want to do is to make a global quilt to connect our sisters all over the diaspora. We're going to be collecting pieces of fabric to bind us together, to weave us together. And, you know, we want to produce a mass quilt, several of them, but one to start with. And this will be a part of the development of our sisterhood for African women worldwide. And so we're going to tell you more about that very soon. This is one of many of our new projects that we're getting ready to bring forward. We actually started that in 97. We had people, we had a quilt that was done in 97, the similar concept that I initiated. Unfortunately, it was stolen. Did you believe that, Dr. Hasim? It was stolen. So
what?
I decided,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, the stories I can tell you about some of what has happened over these years, people literally have broken into my office a couple of times. It's been, you know, people have no idea what it takes to build a movement. And I'd be honest with you, I didn't either. I never thought about it. I just, when I heard about the Honorable Marcus Garvey and the UNIA, or heard about the Nation of Islam, or heard about, you know, the AAPRP, GC, you know, you just think, oh, yeah, wow, wonderful. Or Black Panther Party.
And to your point.
But you don't
and to your
think
point,
about
that's why,
what it takes to do that. Hey, go ahead, my brother.
No, I was just going to say, to your point, that's why, you know, you can't always theorize all day. In other words, you got to be able to do and then learn from that as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt. Oh, you know, the things that, again, they're not any books really on some of what really goes on in building.
Right.
A really strong organization or movement.
Right.
There hasn't been any really books to give you that kind of guide. That stuff was like on-the-job training. And so I'll be honest and say I had no clue. I mean, not from what I really – listen, in the 100 Amazing Facts about the Million Women March, one of the amazing facts is – and by the way, folks, if you're interested in obtaining the book, please email me at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. We are doing all of this independent. We're not putting anything in Amazon and all of them people just yet. It'll happen, but not just yet. But one of the amazing facts is several years ago, and this was actually several years after the Million Women March, a sister confided in me, and she told me that she was at a meeting. And at the meeting, they were having a discussion. This was during the organizing period of the Million Women March. And people had gotten really pissed off at me, really upset with me, because I would not relinquish my position. And I don't mean position just in terms of being the sole founder, by the way. They wanted to create some other illusion. But my position in terms of being self-determined and being African-centered
and, you know, they culture, they wanted me to really, you know, do some other stuff. So when I refused and also refused, you know, some of the help, supposedly help, people really conspired, and that puts it mildly, to do things to me. So this one sister, after several years, she said, look, I was in a meeting, and people were, and this certain group of people were talking about firebombing your store. I was like, huh? She said, yeah, they were talking about firebombing your shop. And by the way, those who do not know, I had a shop called Stiltwalkers on South Street. It was cultural. We had a cafe upstairs, my brother and I, books, art, you name it. We had it on 3 floors. And that's where the Million Woman March got started. So anybody say anything else different, they're lying. But anyway, this one sister, after several years, she said, yep. She said, I was in a meeting, and they were going to firebomb your store. She said she was so shocked she just left. So family, again, I had no idea what I was really walking into. I had no idea the type of hatred, the type of envy, the type of jealousy. And by the way, the gatekeepers, when we had that conversation, that's going to be a good one. But Brother Hasim, did you hear what I just said?
I did. I had a question. However, I said I'll ask you that question and have a conversation with you off the line.
Oh, yeah. It's been an interesting ride, let me tell you. But the beautiful thing is I survived, you know. Took many losses in this process, but never, ever, ever gave up or gave in or change anything, you know, beyond a certain point. Never, ever. So we good. All right, family. We're going to close this session out again. We're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Maat and Hotep. But remember, there will never be any real peace until there's truly some justice. And guess what? There's many types of justice. You've heard us talk about reparatory justice. There's all different types of justice. Well, there's something that we also call the Maatic justice. And that's what we're talking about. And until we have that, if there's no justice, Maatic justice, there's no what, Dr. Hasim?
No peace.
No peace, y'all. No peace. All right. We also say, promote to the sender. Together we shall win. And hey, we're going to hear something now before we close out, or as we close out, the great Dr. Francis Chris Welsing. Before we do, family, please feel free to email me at nationalmwm@aol.com. We have sessions coming up on Thursday through Sunday, Reparatory Justice, our virtual monthly conference. But this time we are focusing also on our women. So we'll get some emails and texts on that starting on Monday. But for now, Dr. Francis Chris Welsing, Tuta.
And I thought if I want to be successful for my people, I have to ask the generation, what is it? And I'm afraid I thought about Marxists. And I like Marxist theory in the sense that it's intended to tie everything up. In other words, how to understand wrong. But after attempting to use Marxian theory, solid black people, I'm just breaking the evidence. I remember going home and my family was sitting around the dining room table and my grandmother was there and I said, I'm Marx. And my grandmother said, more education they get from government. But anyway, I wanted to understand racism more of that. When I finished 3 years of residency at St. Elizabeth, and then I did 2 years of Crossing Pike Fellowship and Social Council, still looking for what is racism beyond all kinds of 1967, I met a gentleman whose name is Jimmy Fuller Jr., and you quoted that line on that paper. He was a guard at the Bureau of Engraving here in the District of Columbia. He had been writing about racism from the time he was in the Korean War. He was sitting on radar sites in Japan, and he started thinking about the United States. To make a long story short, he ended up saying and thinking about racism as a total system structure. And I think everybody should get that word clearly in their mind. He said racism is a system, and the system is for maintaining the power equation for white power over a relative non-white power system. And so talking with him for a long time, he said that the system was operative in all areas of production, economic, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, and business sector. So he was a pirate. And I say old society, new school society, is to learn about the chemicals in the brain and learn about the pharmaceuticals that affect it. But old school society was wondering why behavior is what it is. What is the cause of this factor of behavior being what it is? So I kept saying, well, why on this planet would this particular power equation be important? And I thought about after standing in my kitchen at 743 Fairmont Street, just up and around the corner. And it just came to me to find the power equation of white power over relative non-white power. And I thought about some of the things that were said within the question. I hope we have time to come out and tell you about the importance of all that. And I'll tell you about your course. I thought about some major aspects of the discussion that would take place. That black people were successfully experienced. People started by the stuff. Thought about that. And I thought about the fact that the people of color on this planet are referred to as minorities. Where in reality, on this planet, the overwhelming majority of people are people of color, black, brown, red, and yellow, 9/10 of the people. And they are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration. Anybody have a question on what that means? Just look at Barack Obama. Barack Obama is an example of the dominance of the ability to produce the black pigment dominant by his mother's white. But because the ability to produce that black pigment is genetically dominant, anytime we mix white plus a color, black, brown, red, and yellow, so you get a colored person. And so my brain gets put on and says, that's it. In other words, if the people who classify themselves as white on this planet, and let me just give you an example of a little diagram. I tell people to think about 1492. And Columbus started growing this European people coming out of Europe and circumnavigating the planet. And I say every place they landed, it was coming to them. And if the men on those ships had sexual relations that were part of the hospitality, and so I thought, well, these women, they
Thank you.